Craig tapped the leg of the uniformed gorilla standing above him. It was the signal, and the gorilla lobbed the grenade that he was holding in his right hand with the pin already drawn. It went up in a high, lazy parabola and dropped neatly into the machine gun emplacement. At the same instant, Craig said quietly to the man on either side of him, "Kill them." They thrust the muzzles of their AKs through the firing slits in the canopy, and the range was less than 10 paces. The volley ripped into the unprepared guards before they could bring up their weapons. The sergeant raced back towards the guardroom, but Comrade Lookout leaned out of the cab with a Tokarev pistol in a stiff-armed double grip and shot him twice in the back. As the sergeant sprawled, the grenade burst behind the sandbags, and the barrel of the heavy machine gun swiveled aimlessly towards the sky as the hidden gunner was torn by flying shrapnel. "Drive!" Craig stuck his head and shoulders through the slit in the canopy and yelled at the driver through the open window of the cab. "Smash through the gate!" The powerful diesel of the Toyota bellowed, and the truck surged forward. There was a rending crash, and the vehicle bucked and shuddered, checked for an instant, and then roared into the brightly lit compound, dragging a tangle of barbed wire and shattered gate timbers behind it. Craig scrambled up beside the machine gunner on the cab. "On the left," he directed his fire at the barrack room of adobe and thatch beside the gate. The machine gunner fired a long burst into the knot of half-naked troopers as they spilled out of the front door. "Guard tower on the right." They were receiving fire from the two guards in the tower. It hissed and cracked around their heads like the lash of a stockwhip. The machine gunner traversed and elevated, and the belted ammunition fed into the clattering breech, and empty cases poured in a glittering stream from the ejector slide. Splinters of timber and glass flew from the walls and windows of the tower, and the two guards were picked up and flung backwards by the solid strike of shot. "Number one Hutman just ahead," Craig warned Sarah with a shout. She and her two men were crouched to the tailboard, and as the Toyota slowed, they jumped over and hit the ground running. Sarah carried the bolt cutters, and the two gorillas ran ahead of her, jinking and dodging and firing from the hip. Craig slid over the side of the truck, onto the running board, and clung to the cab. "Drive for the copy," he shouted to the driver. "We have to take the radio." The fortified copy lay directly ahead, but they had to cross the wide, brightly lit parade ground with the whitewashed wall at the far end to reach the foot of the copy. Craig glanced backwards. Sarah and her team had reached the Hutman and were working on the wire with the bolt cutters. Even as he watched, they completed their opening and broke through, disappearing into the building. He looked for the second truck. It was roaring around the perimeter just inside the wire, taking on each guard tower as they came to it, and pouring suppressing fire into it with the heavy machine gun. They had knocked out four towers already, only two more to go. The bright flash of bursting grenades dragged his attention to the barracks abutting the main prison Hutman. The second truck had dropped a group of guerrillas to attack these barracks. Craig could see them crouched below the sills of the barracks, popping grenades through the windows, and then, as they exploded, darting forward, bright as moths in the floodlights, towards the main prison Hutman. In the first few minutes, they had taken control of the entire camp. They had knocked out the towers, devastated the guardhouse, and both barrack blocks. It was all theirs. He felt a surge of triumph. And then he looked ahead across the parade ground at the copy. Everything but the copy. And as he thought it, a line of white tracer stretched out towards him from the sandbagged upper slopes of the rocky hillock. It looked like a string of bright white fire beads, at first coming quite slowly, but accelerating miraculously as they closed, and suddenly there was flying dust and the shriek of ricochets all around them and the jarring crashing of shot into the metal body of the racing truck. The truck swerved wildly, and Craig screamed at the driver as he clung desperately to the projecting rearview mirror. "Keep going! We have to get the radio!" The driver wrestled with the wrenching, bucking steering wheel, and the nose of the truck swung back towards the copy just as the second burst of machine gun fire hit it. The windscreen exploded in flying diamond chips, and the driver was hurled against the door of the cab, his chest shot half away. The truck slowed as his foot slipped from the accelerator pedal. Craig hit the handle and yanked the door open. The driver's body slid out of the seat and tumbled overside. Craig swung himself into his place and jammed his foot flat on the accelerator. The truck lunged forward again. Beside Craig, Comrade Lookout was firing his AK through the gaping hole where the windscreen had been shot away, and overhead the heavy machine gun returned the fire from the copy with a fluttering, ear-numbing clatter. The streams of opposing tracer fire seemed to meet and mingle in the air above the bare earth of the parade ground. And then Craig saw something else. From one of the embrasures in the sandbag walls at the foot of the hill, a black blob, the size of a pineapple, flew towards them on a tiny tail of flame. He knew instantly what it was, but he didn't even have time to shout a warning as the RPG-7 rocket missile hit them. It hit low into the front end of the truck. That was all that saved them. The main blast was absorbed by the solid engine block, but nevertheless it tore the front end off the truck and stopped it as though it had run into an ironstone cliff. The Toyota somersaulted over its ruined front wheel assembly, hurling Craig out of the open cab door. Craig crawled up onto his knees, and the machine gun on the hill traversed back towards him. A stream of bullets showered him with chunks of hard, dried clay from the surface of the parade ground, and he fell flat again. There were stunned and wounded gorillas scattered around the wrecked Toyota. One man was trapped under it, his legs and pelvis crushed by the steel side, and he was screaming like a rabbit in a wire snare. "Come on!" Craig shouted in Cinderbelly. "Get to the wall, the wall, the wall! Run for the wall!" He jumped up and started to run. The whitewashed execution wall was off to their right-hand side, 70 yards away, and a handful of men heard him and ran with him. The machine gun came hunting back. The whip crack of passing shot around his head made Craig reel like a drunkard, but he steadied himself, and the man just ahead of him went down, both legs shot from under him. As Craig passed him, he rolled on his back and threw his AK up at Craig. "Here, Kufela, take it! I am dead!" Craig snatched the rifle from the air without missing a step. "You're a man," he called to the downed gorilla, and sprinted on. Ahead of him, Comrade Lookout reached the shelter of the wall, but the machine gunner on the copy traversed back towards Craig, kicking up the curtains of dust and lumps of clay as the stream of bullets reached out for him. Craig went for the corner of the wall feet first, sliding like a baseball player for home base, and shot flew close around him. He kept rolling until he hit the wall and lay in a tangle of limbs, fighting for breath. Only Comrade Lookout and two others had made it to the wall. The rest of them were dead. Dead in the truck, or lying broken and crumpled on the open ground between them. "We have to get that gun," he gasped, and Comrade Lookout gave him a twisted grin. "Go to it, Kofella. We will watch you with great interest." Another RPG rocket missile slammed into the wall, deafening them and covering them with a fine haze of white dust. Craig rolled on his side and checked the AK-47. It had a full magazine. Comrade Lookout passed him another full magazine from the haversack on his shoulder, and Craig had the Tukarev pistol on his belt and two remaining grenades buttoned into his breast pockets. He darted another quick glance around the corner of the wall, and instantly a burst of machine gun fire kicked and jarred into the brickwork around his head. He rolled back. It was only 100 yards or so to the foot of the copy, but it could as well have been 100 miles. They were pinned helplessly, and the gunner up there on the hill commanded the entire compound. Nobody could move under the floodlights without drawing instant fire or a rocket from the RPG launcher. Craig looked anxiously for the second truck, but sensibly the driver must have parked it behind one of the buildings as soon as the RPG opened up. There was no sign of any of the other guerrillas. They were all under cover, but they had taken more casualties than they could afford. "It can't end like this!" Craig was consumed by his own sense of frustration and helplessness. "We've got to get that gun!" The gun up on the hill, without a target, fell silent. And then suddenly, in the silence, Craig heard the singing again, low at first, just a few voices, but swelling and growing strong. "Why do you weep, widows of Shangani, when the three-legged guns laugh so loudly?" Then the ancient fighting chant crashed into the silence, flung out by hundreds of throats. "Why do you weep, little sons of the moles, when your fathers did the king's bidding?" And then from the prison huts they came. a motley army of naked figures, some of them staggering with weakness, others running strongly, carrying stones and bricks and poles torn from the roofs of their prison. A few, a very few, had picked up the weapons of the dead guards, but all of them were singing with wild defiance as they charged the hill and the machine gun. "Oh, Christ," whispered Craig. "It's going to be a massacre." In the front rank of the throng, brandishing an AK-47, came a tall, gaunt figure, looking like a skeletal caricature of death itself. And the army of starvelings and jail sweepings rallied to him. Even altered as he was, Craig would have recognised Tungata Zabiwe anywhere this side of hell. "Sam, go back!" he shouted, using the name by which he had known his friend. But Tungata came on heedlessly, and beside Craig, Comrade Lookout said phlegmatically, "They will draw fire. That will be our chance." "Yes, be ready," Craig answered. Lookout was right. They must not let them die in vain. And as he spoke, the machine gun opened up. "Wait!" Craig grabbed Comrade Lookout's arm. "He must change belts soon." And while he waited for the gun to fire away its first belt, he watched the terrible havoc it was playing amongst the throng of released prisoners. The stream of tracers seemed to wash them away like a fire hose. But as the front rank fell, so the men behind raced forward into the gaps, and still Tungata Zabiwe was coming on, outdistancing his fellows, firing the AK as he ran. And the gunner on the hilltop singled him out and swung the machine gun onto him so that he was wreathed in smoking dust, still miraculously untouched as the machine gun abruptly fell silent. "Gun empty!" Craig shouted. "Go, go, go!" They launched themselves like sprinters off the blocks, and the open ground seemed to stretch ahead of Craig to the ends of the earth. Another rocket missile howled over their heads, and Craig ducked on the run, but it was high, aimed in panic. It flew across the parade ground, and it hit the silver bulk fuel storage tank next to the guard barracks. The fuel went up with a vast whooshing detonation. The flames shot up 200 feet in the air, and Craig felt the hot breath of the blast sweep over him, but he kept running and firing. He had been losing ground steadily to Comrade Lookout and the other guerrillas, his bad leg hampering him in the race for the hill. But while he ran, he was counting in his head. A good man might need 10 seconds to change ammunition boxes and reload the machine gun. Since leaving the sheltering wall, 7 seconds had passed. 8, 9, 10. It must come now, and there were still 20 paces to cover. Comrade Lookout reached the sandbagged fortifications and shinned up and over. Then something hit Craig a crushing hammer blow, and he was thrown violently to the ground as bullets flew all around him. He rolled over and came up again running, but the gunner had seen him go down and swung the machine gun away, back to the charging mob of released prisoners. Hit, but unharmed, Craig ran on as strongly as before, and he realised that he had taken it in the leg, the artificial leg. He wanted to laugh. It was so ridiculous. And he was so terrified. "You can only do that to me once," he thought, and suddenly he had reached the top of the kopje. He jumped up, found a hold on the top of the sandbag parapet with one hand, and heaved himself up and over. He dropped onto the narrow, deserted firing platform on the other side. "The radio!" He fixed his will upon it. "Got to get the radio!" And he jumped down into the communication trench and ran down it to the bend in the passage. There was a sound of a scuffle and a cry ahead of him. And as he came around the corner, Comrade Lookout was straightening up from the body of the 3rd Brigade trooper who had been manning the RPG. "Go for the gun," Craig ordered him. "I'll take the radio room." Craig climbed up the sandbag passageway, passing the dugout where he had been quartered on his last visit. "Now, first on the left." He dived into the opening, brushing aside the curtain of Hessian, and he heard the radio operator in his dugout at the end of the passage shouting frantically. Craig hurled himself down the narrow passage and paused in the doorway. Too late. His stomach turned over in a despairing convulsion. The radio operator, dressed only in a vest and underpants, was hunched over the radio set on the bench by the far wall of the dugout. He was holding the microphone to his mouth with both hands, shouting his warning into it in English, repeating it for the third time. And as Craig hesitated, the acknowledgement boomed from the speaker, also spoken in clear English. "Message received and understood," said the voice of the operator at brigade headquarters in Harare. Hold on! We will reinforce you immediately! Craig fired a long burst of the AK, and his bullets smashed into the radio, shattering the housing and ripping the wiring out of it in a glittering tangle. The unarmed radio operator dropped the microphone and cowered against the sandbag wall, staring at Craig, blubbering with terror. Craig swung the AK onto him, but could not force himself to fire. Instead, the burst of automatic fire came from the passageway behind Craig, startling him. And then, for an instant, the operator was pinned to the wall by striking bullets, and he slid down into a huddle on the floor. "You always were too soft, Pouffo," said the deep voice beside Craig, and he turned and looked up at the gaunt, naked figure that towered over him, into the scarred and desiccated visage, into the dark, hawk-fierce eyes. "Sam," Craig said weakly, "by God, it's good to see you again."